Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program. You're on Sunday night on ABC Radio around Australia, through Radio Australia and via the web to the world. And we're crossing the world now. It's time to welcome once again into our small but important clique here on Sunday nights, Tom Roberts of the National Catholic Reporter in the USA. Tom, thanks for joining us.
And a pleasure once again to be with you.
Tom, lots of news out of the United States. We're watching the Republican primaries unfold across the country. Religion seems to be burbling along in the background and bursting through every now and again. And it seems that the Democrats have been quite happy to watch the Republicans sort themselves out over the issue of religious purity. Until a week or so ago, when quite uncharacteristically, Barack Obama's side seemed to take a tumble when the issue of contraception intruded itself into the race through a decision by Catherine Sebelius and the Health Department in the United States to make it mandatory for contraception services to be available under Obamacare through all services, including Catholic hospitals. And this really set the tails wagging on the dogs.
Yes, it did. And the central question, when you say the Obama administration took a tumble, I'm presuming you mean that he had pretty much of the Catholic world saying, don't do this. The agreement about this went across what some normal divides. So you had, however you want to label it, liberal to conservative or progressive to, you know, orthodox, however, in agreement. So you had really very high-level name commentators and Catholic journalists and the rest of it saying, and including NCR saying, you need to fix this. The fix is, and the reason, what had to be fixed was this. The mandate for the new health care plan said that defined religious organizations very, very narrowly. And what it ended up doing was separating places of worship and things and locations that are really identifiably religious from Catholic hospitals, schools, charities, and the rest of it. And what the Catholic world was fairly unanimous in saying is you can't bifurcate us that way. What we do in the world is in charity and clothing and feeding and all the rest of it and caring for people is a core religious activity. And this definition just narrows the definition that we've used in the federal code for tax purposes and other reasons for decades.
Yes, and it had the potential to spill out into other areas. If you accept the definition that is so narrow, then that can spill out elsewhere. So there's a precedent element as well as the specific issue of Catholic institutions and bodies having to deliver information, that is, on contraception and provide access to contraception, which is something that church teaching has a fairly clear line on.
Precisely. But this core issue over which there was agreement is you can't define us that way. You can't change the definition. And you can't require, because of that, Catholic and other religious bodies to do things that violate their stated teachings and principles. Now, that was the clear part. And the Obama administration came out with an arrangement, right, a fix, if you will, that said, okay, the organizations do not have to provide that. Insurance companies have to provide it, and it'll be for free so that no one is paying any money for it. Across a good span of the Catholic world in the United States, the reaction to that was, good, thank you, let's walk away with a victory. But this is where the splits in the Catholic community in the United States begin to show up, and rather strongly, because you had some in the bishops' conference, in the bureaucracy of the conference itself, some among the bishops who were saying, no, this mandate has got to go entirely. There were others, Sister Carol Keehan, who really fought for health care reform, and who is head of the Catholic Hospital Association, saying we can work with this, and also Catholic Charities. The initial reaction was this will be okay. And there were a number of other agencies that said we can do this. This is a fine fix. And whatever problems remain, the administration said they'll work with us because we have this year to work this thing out. Well, it became the political attack point for a number of both bishops and especially among more conservative Catholic groups. And the range of reasons behind that, I think, is pretty wide. But that's the ongoing dispute that you're hearing now.
The politics of this, according to some, is that Obama has turned a potential embarrassment or a real embarrassment and threat to his standing with many Catholics into an advantage in that he is now able to wedge those Catholics who want to take a firm puritanical absolutist stand on contraception as an issue with the broader Catholic population, the vast majority of Catholic women that actually use artificial contraception, and he's actually now able to play it as a wedge.
Precisely. What he's got here, I think, reading it just politically, is a win-win. The win is you accommodated the church, and you provided this fix, so that the people who are saying now that it has to be abandoned entirely, that mandate, or you have to allow for individual entrepreneurs to exercise their own conscience rights on this. In other words, make a claim under free exercise under our First Amendment, and anybody can deny whatever they want if they're employers. It becomes an extremist position for much of the culture. The other thing is that, listen, this is a campaign year. The Obama White House, any other campaign, are reading the polls, and the polls say this just is a non-starter. This is not a pressing moral issue for most Catholics. The unfortunate thing is that this argument and debate over defining religious entities was done. Or the impetus for it was artificial birth control, contraception. And they read the polls. Guttmacher Institute has released polls over the years. I think it's like 90 to 98% of Catholic women sexually active use birth control. The other polls that have been consistently 75% and above saying Catholics just reject the teaching. So they know what they're dealing with. It's a non-starter in terms of arguing with the administration on that issue of contraception.
This takes us to another point, which perhaps I'd like to deviate onto now, and it has to do with an issue that's closer to the church and the way it sees itself in the context of the United States. We've recently had the appointment of Timothy Dolan, the Archbishop of New York, elevated to cardinal. And it throws up an interesting observation when one looks at the sorts of things that cardinals have to swear to or promise to adhere to when they reach that exalted status. And this perhaps throws this other discussion into a broader light. One of the lines in the profession of faith that has to be made: moreover, I adhere with religious submission of will and intellect to the teachings which either the Roman Pontiff or the College of Bishops enunciate when they exercise their authentic magisterium, even if they do not intend to proclaim those teachings by a definitive act. This seems to be binding people ever more narrowly to a church's view of correctness, which plays against that broader sensibility in the United States.
It does, and I don't envy any cardinal at this point trying to negotiate the various strains of Catholicism in the United States. And I don't mean to talk about schism there, but there are ways of adhering to the institution and attitudes about it that even the official church is beginning to recognize. I mean, the head of pastoral planning for the Boston Archdiocese, and I can't remember his name offhand, but we recently had a conversation. He's a Franciscan, the same order as Archbishop O'Malley of Boston. And what he's looking at is the way people attach now differently to the institution. His questions, I think, are questions that really are questions for the future. And instead of asking, as so many do, what happened to Catholics, or how did we go wrong, or how did they go wrong, or how do we get back our, you know, separated brethren and all the rest of it, he begins by asking the question, what do Catholics need? What are the compelling questions of today for Catholics? We need to talk to them to figure this out, especially in the landscape of the Catholic Church in the United States is changing so dramatically over the last couple of decades and will continue to change, both in terms of demographics, in terms of money, and in terms of you know, other kinds of resources, and certainly in terms of vocations. Priests and nuns just aren't available in the numbers that were are necessary to sustain the model as it once existed. Timothy Dolan did a book-length interview with my colleague John Allen recently, and one of the lines that he spoke really struck me. Is the new, now Cardinal Archbishop of New York, saying that he has a theory that one of the biggest problems for Catholic hierarchy in the United States today is that they are strangling on the behemoth of institutional Catholicism that they inherited from the 40s and 50s. It's a striking way to talk about the institutional edifice that defined you for so many decades. They're strangling on it. So what do you do with this? And it's a logical and very easy question to ask. Everybody is kind of struggling with the answer, and there's really no national conversation about it. But what it's indicating is that the church is changing dramatically, that there are lots of ways being thought about and acted out on about how to be church, people trying to figure out how to do this in a future of, in terms of certainly diminished resources, and we've not come to any clear answer yet.
And the tension seems to be between those who want to retreat into a top-down mentality, that's just get your act together and do as the hierarchy wants, or those saying, no, this is far more profound than this. It's not only the church changing, it's the culture shifting at the ground level, and that cultural shift, we can't even keep up with that at the ground. And the two illustrations there would be the increase in the Hispanic colour of the church, but also in the way in which demographics in the United States are changing. We've seen the collapse, and we've seen it shown on television here in Australia, of cities like Detroit, which was sort of Motown, and it's just gone. So there's not only a profound change in the church and the people it represents, but also in the nature of the cities themselves.
Absolutely. There are all kinds of changes going on. I give time for a little story. My wife and I were at a Christmas morning mass at a parish in New Jersey where we used to attend. And, this woman was, I think it was a woman next to me, was struggling with the language of the new language of the liturgy, and at one point she just said, "Oh, whatever," and I you know, just about buckled over with laughter. I don't think that's a good way to put it. But I went back to my childhood missal and looked at that phrase, the one about the most recent was, "I'm not worthy to receive you." The old one was about, "I'm not worthy that you should enter under my roof," and that language recalled all of those memories of childhood in a church that had absolute certainty, was really a kind of muscular presence in this culture. And I thought, you know, there is a way those of us who cover this stuff understand that this is an attempt to squeeze back into that certainty, that era of when we knew what we were and how we were, and it was never going to change. But at that same mass, however, the priest, fully vested, before he started the mass, came up front and said, "I need volunteers because the people who were supposed to show up and help distribute the Eucharist didn't for some reason, and so I need six volunteers." "Oh yes, you. Okay, and we'll figure out bread and wine as we go along." I thought they could try to squeeze us back to that old reality, but what's certain is no priest of my childhood ever would have imagined having to come up in front of a congregation and ask for volunteers for one of the most sacred moments in our liturgy. The real message to me in that little anecdote is they can't do it alone anymore. It can't be top down. That all the stuff you need for that, it doesn't exist anymore, and we have to find ways to do things differently. It's a very interesting, I think, dynamic.
And again, it's showing that the church is caught up in a wider debate, which is reflected through the primary season, but will be reflected even more in the election season if the way it's shaping up comes to be seen to be true. That is, you're fighting a deep culture war. Even though Obama said he wanted to get rid of the culture wars are very deep because it's a process of transition that is, for institutions, so radical that it's impossible to keep pace with.
And I think you're seeing the culture wars, the culture warriors in the political realm come to the fore again. People like Newt Gingrich, he's the newly recently converted Catholic. I think this is his third denomination, going around the landscape with the political landscape with his third wife. We know that there was a rather checkered past in all of that in his personal life. And yet he's become sort of a champion of the new morality and a real champion of religious orthodoxy. You know, Rick Santorum saying things like the devil is attacking, Satan is attacking the United States. This is a spiritual war. It's not a political war. You have that sort of old Catholic language of certainty and putting the world together in a way that, you know, there aren't any questionable or gray areas or rough edges. I don't know how it's going to play in the general election. I think the real distinction we're going to see this year is between what's going on now and what happens in the general election. But I think also that it's important to note, I think it's very clear that the Bishop's Conference itself here is very split in some ways. And I think that some of it is very political. I think there are people who have a really deep and visceral dislike for the Obama administration. I think there are bishops who have real Republican tendencies in terms of policy choices. And we're seeing that played out. So the other thing that we're seeing here is that as a result of the 25 years of John Paul II appointments and his very clear effort to sort of neutralize the conference as a national body with a unified voice, we have sort of a leaderless group now. I mean, Timothy Dolan, Cardinal of New York, now is, I think, trying to assert that leadership, and I think lots of people want him to, but he's got deep factions to deal with. He's got really strong interests on the far right and the far left. And I don't know how you bring order to all of this. The conference is no longer used to acting as a body to make sort of national pronouncements. So you have bishops responding to Obama's fix, for instance, of this mandate for health care in very different ways. Some of them are real culture warriors. Others are saying this is a moment for finding common cause. It's a very fluid and dynamic and also split Catholic body in this country at this point.
Let me ask a more general question in the context of that. You've got the Republican primaries at the moment, religion becoming one of those touchstone issues, and religious denominationalism or sectarianism potentially rearing its head, because the reason religion is being driven through this primary season by some is because it will enable people like Santorum and Gingrich to wave, to give in Australian terms, the dog whistle that Romney, the potential front runner, is not in fact one of us. He is not a Christian. He is a Mormon, and they are not of our culture. They are something different. They do not believe what we believe. Now, is this the subtext that's being sort of fed through here?
Well, in terms of Romney, the subtext is mostly being spoken by surrogates, people not directly part of the campaigns. So you have some fundamentalist evangelical preachers who are saying that kind of thing. What I find actually frightening is the just bald attacks on Obama's spirituality and religious faith. I mean, they're just, you know, Santorum particularly is questioning what he is. And this is part of a long series of, as columnist E.J. Dionne wrote, I think, today in the Washington Post, long series of attempts, and heating up, especially in the Republican primary, of trying to keep Obama as something other than one of us. I mean, the man's a capitalist. He's wealthy. He's got a very predictable and solid, healthy family life. He plays golf. And yet, the attempt is always to put him, you know, the birther controversy, which still isn't entirely out of the system. And this whole question about, is he a Muslim? Is he a Muslim because his father was one? Is his conversion real? Is he really a Christian? It gets nasty and really distasteful. But there, you're right. What you're sensing is there's a swirl of religious stuff going on here. I don't think anybody has a handle on it. A lot of it is, you know, the attempt is to make it a subtext and not be right out about it. And so there's an ugliness to it that I think is really disconcerting.
How do you, just broadly at this stage in the process, how do you think this will play out? I mean, the sense you get in Australia generally is that the Republicans are moving towards a Goldwater movement, which is opening up the opportunity for the Democrats to move into the middle.
Well, I think that's very true. I mean, I don't know how, given what the Republicans have been through and the ammunition they have provided the Democrats over the course of, 20 debates now, and really, really ugly television advertising. I don't know how any of them survives the general election for two reasons. One, because of the amount of stuff they've thrown at each other. And the second thing is that they keep pushing whoever will eventually be the nominee. And, you know, there's this whole question of will Santorum prevail in essentially Romney's home state of Michigan? I mean, he's, you know, the polls are really interesting in that state. But whoever is eventually the nominee will have moved so far to the right. And when you put that where they are on the political spectrum, in terms of the general election and the general populace, they are so far right, and the core of support is so out of the mainstream that I don't know how they bounce back. I mean, we saw it, you know, not only got Barry Goldwater, but we saw it with George McGovern on the Democratic side, and they, you know, they don't win anything. I don't know. I mean, this year has been so unusual. I mean, the primary certainly has, that I'm not going to, you know, I wouldn't make any absolute predictions about it. I mean, it's really unusual. But I don't know what mechanics you use to get back into the middle. You'd have to just throw over so much stuff that you've been forced to swear to almost.
Well, let's move to perhaps back into easier turf, that is the church itself.
That's easier?
Well, we get some strange stories in Australia popped up in the news in the past week. A story about leaks from the Vatican, that is that the Curia don't speak necessarily with a single voice, that there was a story that there was sort of corruption in the management of the Holy See, and that people were leaking to the press and the media things about what was going on in the Vatican, particularly with regards to current appointments and other things. That seemed to indicate that Benedict XVI was not guiding an entirely happy ship. Now, you've written about some of this yourself. What's going on here?
I don't know, but our new nuncio, Archbishop Vigano, was one of the people who is at the center of this whole thing, and he wrote a long letter to Benedict talking about the lack of accountability and some of the corruption in the Vatican. And the word is he got the United States sort of as a second prize. It wasn't where he wanted to be or what he wanted to do. John Allen, who covers Rome for us, wrote a column that was published on Friday. And what he's saying is that you can read this a couple of ways. One is that this reform, you know, that Benedict is sort of losing control of things. But the other way you can read it is that he is opening things up, that he is appointing people who are not part of that normal insider Vatican, you know, wink and a nod to corruption crowd, and some of this stuff is getting out because of that. He's pointing people who do honor accountability and come from cultures and outside the Italian Vatican culture where there is a accountability and transparency, and people who appreciate that. I don't know, quite frankly, what the reason is, but we're certainly getting a taste of something's unsettled in the Vatican. And I think it's, you know, my immediate impression from what I've read is this is healthy, and we need to go here. There are so many levels of the church where accountability and transparency just have never been part of the picture. And I think that's again, we were talking earlier about those shifting demographics and shifting plates under the church here. And I think this is part of it. You know, we're being dragged, kicking and screaming into a new century and a new reality. The 21st century demands that kind of thing from any institution. And we're just slow getting there.
It sort of reminds one of the line from the old hymn, doesn't it? The change and decay in all around I see, help of the helpless, oh, abide with me. No, we can't be too pessimistic about this, Tom Roberts. NCR is a magazine that over the years has provided a window not only onto American culture but onto Catholic life in the United States. What we're seeing here really is part of a broader dynamism in which, as we approach the anniversary of the great shift of Vatican II, people are beginning to actually reinvent or reawaken those debates, only this time in a real context. That is, there is real change in the landscape. We have to face it.
I would agree with you there. I really do. And I know I may be out of tune or out of step with some of the thinking, but I think we're really going through now some of the real stuff of Vatican II. That council opened questions in a way no other council before it did. You know, I've written about this, and I don't want to do too much self-promotion, but in the book, you know, The Emerging Catholic Church, I really think that is part of the really big part of the emergence. Those questions were opened. A lot of people who were in charge of effecting the changes didn't like the answers, but they're almost inevitable over time. These are answers of a postmodern age. These are answers that the church has to square up with in an era that is not an era of kings and princes and power and authority by virtue of office. The age and our experience as human demand something else, and I am optimistic about this, and I think there is so much good stuff that I've run into reporting on the ground in the United States that's being done in out of the heart of the gospel, in the name of the Catholic, especially social justice tradition and its teachings, its spirituality, that part has not stopped blooming. I mean, you know, we have this priest shortage, but we have, I think, around 40,000 lay ministers who are trained and being paid something for their work in the church today here in the United States. That's enormous. You know, we have half the world's permanent deacons, and that may be another layer of male ordination, but it's also people who bring wives and kids and family experience to this. So, that's another thing. It's changing right before our eyes in our midst, and sometimes you can't appreciate it. You can't understand how big the change is until you step back from it and try and get a 15,000-foot view.
Tom Roberts, it's a view we'll continue to explore this year as we go on. We look forward to catching up again on events in the church and the world and the politics of the United States over the next few months. Thanks so much for joining us.
Always enjoy it, John. Thank you.
Tom Roberts of the National Catholic Reporter in the USA. This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.